You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Homelessness has exploded across our nation. Many cities, all sizes of cities, are experiencing more homeless encampments popping up. Often they're right in the heart of the business communities. They're right in front of people's homes and residential areas. And why is this? Is it just that people want to live and be homeless? No, there's really three aspects of the people that are homeless. And they are people that are mentally ill in some way, people that are substance abusers or addicted to drugs. And then I think that there's a portion of people that are just people who want to take advantage of the system. They don't want to pay to live anywhere. So they pitch a tent and they decide that that's what they're going to do. That's a minority of the population. I want to talk about the people that I'm the most concerned with, which is those that are mentally ill. And how did we get where we are today with this homeless issue and with the issues with mental illness in our communities? How did we get here? Back in the late 1950s, California, always the leader in everything, right? Everybody follows what California does, and this was not a good thing that everybody followed. They started deinstitutionalizing psychiatric patients and moving them to a variety of for-profit group homes. So picture this. You have the mental hospitals back in those days where people were living, where they were getting medication, where they were getting care. And California said, you know, this just doesn't seem fair that people have to live in these places. Some of them don't want to be here, but they're made to be here. So we are going to send them out and put them in these for-profit group homes, boarding care homes, nursing homes, foster homes. And that's what they started doing. By 1967, when Ronald Reagan became the governor, almost half of the state hospitals had shuttered. In 1967, California's legislature also passed a bill called the Lanterman-Petras Short Act, which almost entirely abolished involuntary commitment. So if you had a relative who couldn't live out in your world and needed to have inpatient care, they now were not made to be inpatients anymore. So they started putting these patients in these homes. And what happened was when they went to these homes, they were no longer forced to stay there. And they were no longer forced to take their medication as they were in the hospital setting. So they went to the homes and, you know, they had lived in institutions. So this was not a way that they were used to living. And if they chose to walk out of that home and just leave, then they could do that. They generally were in rundown communities. And as people left the homes and they stopped getting their medications, where did they end up? They ended up on the streets. So the homeless, mentally ill people formerly in institutions flooded towns. Then in 1973, in Long Beach, New York, the city council passed an ordinance that those mentally ill people, for them to remain in their group homes, they had to take their prescribed medications. The New York ACLU sued, and they said, well, that's not fair. They shouldn't have to take their medications. And a judge ruled that to be unconstitutional. Now, the people across the country were in these homes and no longer had to take their medications to stay in the homes, and they could leave, and they did. All of their safety nets in their lives were gone. Without their needed medications, they were pretty much adrift in life. And this is how this all started. Then just jump to 1980, when Reagan became president, he stopped the funding to the states for mental health. California followed, and other states followed, and they moved more mentally ill into group homes and eventually to our streets. That's how we got from where we were in the 1950s to where we are today in 2022. Ladies, we have a big mental health problem in our country. And one of the examples of it is what you see in these homeless encampments, because you have a good number of people who can't take care of themselves, who are unable to take care of themselves, who are victimized by those in those homeless encampments that are criminals or those that are substance abusers. And these people, they just have no safety net at all. And I just wonder what we've done to our society, because there are a percentage of people in our country who cannot and never will be able to care for themselves. And we as a society are not caring for them.
This is just so big. I mean, this whole topic is behemoth to me. And I have to admit, I'm a little bit naive when it comes to this topic. I was raised in a very small town that was very Caucasian. My exposure to the homeless was zero as I was growing up, even in high school, even through college. And I see it now on a daily basis when I'm living in mid-Michigan here in the capital of the state. And I wrestle with feelings every time I drive by these major intersections, and there are people standing on the street corners holding signs made of cardboard and oftentimes holding really nice cell phones, sometimes appear to be better than mine, wearing nice shoes, expensive backpacks. It's confusing to me. I don't really understand. And I know that those are just a few people. I know downtown Lansing, Michigan, there's an entire area where the homeless live on the streets and under overpasses. And yet when you drive around during the day, it's not so visible, but in the evening, it's quite a different story. So again, I don't have anyone in the immediate family that has a mental illness that I have been with or been around. There is someone in the extended family, a cousin of mine, that actually today has been picked up by a place down near Kalamazoo and is going to be staying there for at least a month to see if he can get some help. But I'm, again, naively thinking, so this happened in the late 50s and 60s. Why is it still so bad? In fact, it's not so bad, it's worse. The decisions made then with the statements further made, taking people off the streets, forcing them to take their medication is an infringement of their rights, boggles my mind. Just don't understand it. Still today, my understanding is here in mid-Michigan, when we have temperatures as we've had this past 2 or 3 weeks, where it's been 8 below, it was -2 just 2 days ago here when we woke up, and where my understanding is the police force is not allowed to physically remove the homeless from the streets and take them to shelters or hospitals because it's an infringement of their rights. So I'm admitting that I'm confused by a lot of this, don't understand a lot of it. I thankfully, through this show, am seeing a lot more. I'm understanding a lot more. It's really, really disheartening what's happening and it's a huge, I mean, it covers mental illness, it covers veterans, which is a whole, we could do a whole show on that. That alone is just tragic. So I'm kind of asking you girls to help me shed some light on some of this.
I can help you there.
Thank you.
So I have some personal experience with not the homeless per se, other than my, when I lived in LA, we lived in Santa Monica for 10 years. And, but that was back in the 80s. And it certainly wasn't as bad as it is today. But it was very prevalent, much more so than it was when I was in Michigan. And I mean, I remember, you know, walking out of Safeway and, or walking into Safeway, and there was a guy, and he had a sign. He also had a dog with him. And I was like, hey, you know, and he was asking for money. And I said, hey, you know what, we lived in a little apartment, but I said, you know, I have this small little flower bed. So if you want to come and weed that, you know, I'll give you $40. To do that. And literally I live three blocks away. And he said, nah, that's okay. That's okay. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. But I went in and I bought a case of dog food for his dog because I felt bad for the dog. But, and I ended up giving him some money, which I don't know if I was making the situation worse or better, but it was interesting that he didn't, you know, he chose that he did not want to put forth any effort to earn the money. So that, you know, that's a small little experience that I had. But personally, my sister is bipolar and manic depressive. And she cannot hold a job down. Okay. And so here's the vicious cycle, okay? She can't hold the job down because she doesn't know when she's not going to show up, right? If she doesn't take her medication, if she, you know, is given medication for these issues, how can I say? She's on Medicaid because she's on disability, right? But they won't institutionalize her. They won't pay for psychiatric, you know, in-house care. She is too old and not old enough to get the benefits that she needs. Basically, what happens is, so what does she do? She self-medicates, right? So she takes drugs that make her feel better, and she became addicted to those drugs. Right. And then, of course, she definitely can't hold a job down. And so what happens with people like this is they end up in emergency, right? When they have a psychotic episode, they end up in emergency and the system can only hold them for 3 days. And then they release them back out to the street and they cannot care for themselves. They can't get the right medication. They can't get the right treatment. The system is completely broken. My sister lived with us for about a year. And, you know, I tried to be an influence and help her. But she had a psychotic episode. She took too many drugs. We didn't allow drugs in our home. And she ended up out on the street, and in the middle of the night, my 8-year-old daughter came upstairs and woke me up and said, Mom, you know, Holly's dogs are out of her room. And I said, well, that's weird. Let's go put them back. And so we went to go put them back and there's no Holly. And one of my dining room chairs was turned over and my front door was wide open, Gabby's lunch that I had packed her was completely disintegrated, as if a wild animal had ripped it apart. And there's no Holly. So I call around, I call the hospitals, and there's no, I gave them my sister's name, and they, you know, there was nobody there by that name. I got in the car, drove around the whole neighborhood. We're in East Lansing. It's a college town. And I couldn't find her anywhere. Somebody actually called from the local, you know, corner store and said they found my wallet. So she had stolen my wallet and used the money or whatever to get whatever. I don't know. And then early in the morning, I called the police station and they said, you know, we did not pick up my sister, but we did pick up a Jane Doe. And she had broken into somebody's house and fallen asleep on their couch. And they called the police. They came and got her. They took her to the emergency, which is exactly what happened. And I called the hospital, asked about the Jane Doe. I described my sister and they said, yep, that's her. And so I went and again, she needed care. To come back from this, she needed 24/7 care. And to overcome this issue, to get her meds regulated, to get off the drugs, to you know, be able to lead a productive and healthy life. But they said, no, we can only hold her for 72 hours and then we have to release her. And here I am. I want to protect her. I want to take care of her, but I have children, two daughters under the age of 8 years old. And I can't have this presence in my home. So of course, so then I go out, I find an apartment, we help her pay for her apartment and get her all moved in. But I remember moving her in and feeling absolutely terrified. How is she going to care for herself? How am I not going to be there to protect her? And what's going to happen to her? And I've lost her. She's still alive. But she ended up breaking in somebody's house to steal their drugs and their money. And she ended up in jail. And then she was released. And the whole thing is so toxic. So toxic.
It's a cycle, isn't it? It's just a cycle that just keeps going around and around. And you know what? It's totally predictable. Why do we have these situations? I mean, your sister was kind of one of the lucky ones, Judy, because
she had family.
She had family. Many of these people, they don't have family. And, you know, groups like the ACLU and other individuals that have sued on behalf of the homeless. And when I say homeless, I'm not just talking about people that are homeless, that are choosing to be homeless. There is a huge mental health population within our homeless population. And those are the people that don't have people to go to, or whose families have given up, or who they don't even know where they are. So, but you have these groups that think that they're doing something right, and they sue on behalf of these people to give them the right to live in front of your home or business and your public spaces and parks. And liberal judges have ruled that living in a non-working vehicle or a cardboard box on the city streets is a domicile and it's constitutionally protected. So as one of you said, the police can't do anything. They can't pick them up and they can't do anything. They just have to leave them alone. That doesn't help anybody and it doesn't help society. And speaking of society, you know, when the liberal judges say it's okay for these homeless people to set up their tents and to urinate where you walk and to have needles on the sidewalks, and like you have in San Francisco right now, you have to have a poop patrol where there's actually a map that you can go online and look at to see where people are calling in and saying that there's poop over here. Somebody needs to pick it up. And they have this poop patrol that goes out and picks it up. And by the way, these guys make a very healthy salary doing that. But what happens to the people that live in those communities? I mean, there is a health hazard. It's a safety hazard. It's a your property is devalued, and the police can't seem to do anything about it because of the laws that are made. Where does that leave the people that are out on the street? And I'm speaking specifically of those people with mental health problems or who are drug addicted. They have nowhere to turn. So the drug addicted people are going to commit crimes in order to support their drug habits. And the crimes that they commit can be on these people that have mental health issues who have no way to protect themselves and have no way to stop people from raping them, from stealing what they do have. There just is no safety net, as I said before. In the past, you know, we were able to commit these people to institutions to help them to get, you know, get straightened away with counseling, with the proper medications. Many of these people that are living on our streets will never be able to, you know, live the way that we all live. They'll never be able to hold down a job. They'll never be able to take care of themselves in the way that you would hope that they could. And what are we as society doing about it? Our misguided way of thinking is saying, well, you know, these people have the right to be free, so we can't make them take their drugs and we can't make them be in institutions, when that is what these people need to be able to have some decency and some sort of a dignified life. And we, in our misguided way of thinking of giving them freedom, have done completely the opposite and made them prisoners to a life on the street, to anybody who wants to assault them, to anybody who wants to steal their possessions, to live in cold and squalor. What are we doing here to our citizens that have mental health issues? They should be people that we care for and that we care about. And caring about them is not leaving them out in the street. I just am so frustrated with this and this misguided sense of doing right by people that is so wrong. And then you have the other segment, which is the drug addicted, and the same thing. Judy mentioned, you know, that they're giving them, you know, these places to take drugs instead of getting them the help to get off the drugs and to live a good life that they can be happy with and proud of. They're just in a vicious cycle that there's no out for any of these people. And we did that to them.
We did.
You know, one thing I find ironic that you said, Linda, was that there's an actual poop patrol outside of these tent cities. Yes. And that the people that are doing this are making good wages. And isn't it somewhat ironic that some of the people that are actually living in the tent cities need to work? And that's about one of the lowliest jobs that you could do, but it is a job that someone's getting paid for. And yet
they're city employees, Becky. They're city employees and they're getting paid over $100,000 a year to do it.
Right. Well, in my mind, I would think that even if you were living on the streets and you could function, that's a job you could do. So that's why I'm saying I find it ironic that they're creating a problem and they're paying other people good wages to clean up their mess. I just find the whole thing is just so messed up. And it's the other thing that I find so difficult to understand in America here is that it's been since 1963. I was just looking that President John F. Kennedy, this was his actual last bill that he signed before he was assassinated, was to release thousands of patients from American mental institutions, people with mental illnesses in these psychiatric hospitals and mental institutions. And yet there really wasn't any program. There was talk of programs and plans for programs, but nothing was instituted. Instead, these people just went to hospitals or prisons, which overcrowded the prisons, and the hospitals couldn't keep them. And so they sent them back out in the streets. The other thing that's very frustrating is it's been 50 to 60 years since this has happened, and we can't figure out how to resolve it or even to make a difference, to make a change and to make it better. It doesn't take very long at all. I mean, I would think within 12 months, it would have been painfully clear that it was a mistake to do what they did to release all these people and close down those institutions. They could have fixed the institutions or fixed the way those institutions were run. Instead, they've created this incredible problem that has not been able to be tackled in 60 years.
Well, and they doubled down on it, Becky, with you have California and Gavin Newsom saying, well, you know, we need to close our jails. And they released so many people the last few years in the jails. And then they say, well, you know, we don't have enough people in the jails, so we're going to close the jails. It's the same thing. So now where do you think all of those people are going to go? Because you have the same population criteria in the jails as you have on the streets. You have those that are criminals, those that are drug addicted, those that are mentally deficient, that get themselves in trouble just because of, you know, they're not mentally capable of making good decisions in life. So what did we do? We doubled down on this now, which is why you see these populations of homeless people just growing in leaps and bounds everywhere.
You know, San Francisco literally is paying $16.1 million for the homeless tent camps.
No.
Okay. They're actually paying, it says San Francisco, this is a San Francisco Chronicle, said that San Francisco pays $61,000 a year for one tent on this site to shelter the homeless, okay? $61,000. So I'm really trying to understand it, you know, but I can't. I think about the insane asylum up in Traverse City, Michigan, and it was actually a spectacularly beautiful facility. And of course, it got closed down when Reagan, you know, did his thing, and they passed all the laws. But this facility, I've toured it. Now it's full of shops and restaurants and condominiums, okay? Because it was so beautiful. The founder, the man who actually designed the insane asylum, and it was Dr. Munson, and he believed that people needed to have a job, he wanted each person that came to his facility to have dignity, so, and fresh air, and he made sure that every single room was very large, had large windows, could have fresh air. Each person had a job within the facility. They had a huge farm, so So they actually grew and produced all of their own food. They had a blacksmith. They had a bakery. Everybody had a job. You can work in the fields. You could work in the library. You could work in the kitchens, in the bakeries. Not because it was quote unquote cost effective, but because it gave you self-confidence when you had some place to go every morning and you were contributing to your community. And having that as well as regulated meds and regulated therapy with different psychologists and psychiatrists, these people were healthy. And I know that there were horrific conditions, okay, in other facilities. I'm sure of it. And experimental surgeries and drugs and, but why couldn't, I just don't understand why we can't take that $61 million, right, and create a beautiful facility like that. And I just think that we need to relook at these laws and put other safeguards in place, not just outlaw things, outlaw laws. It's appalling to me that we would have a poop patrol app to tell us where there's.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any HealthyCell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko knows a thing or two about the immune system. He was nominated for a Nobel Prize for his early COVID-19 treatments, and now he's offering his Z-Stack supplements to our listeners at a discount. Just go to zstacklife.com/freedom. That's zstacklife.com/freedom.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. We are the voice of a nation, the American nation, that is. This is Malcolm Out Loud. I invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com, where the fight for liberty and justice continues. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, ladies, I'm not quite finished with this subject yet because this is really pushing a button for me, and it's hurting my heart. It's really bothering me because I can't understand why there hasn't been the change that needs to happen to improve the situation. We have reached such a point of ridiculousness with the homeless population, turning a blind eye, and channeling funds. And this is just my opinion, but I firmly believe that there are funds to be had that could be used to build new facilities or whatever the answer is. In the article that I was reading about President Kennedy releasing thousands of people with mental health issues from institutions, his plan was to continue to build new facilities and treat symptoms and people better and differently. Unfortunately, he didn't live long enough to help see that program through. And from what I have been reading in the article, the excuse was only half of the facilities that President Kennedy intended to build were actually built because the funding ran out. Well, I don't know. I wasn't there in that specific situation to know those financial records, but it certainly seems like there was funding for a lot of other things that perhaps were not as necessary as taking care of this problem, which even then they had to know was going to grow like wildfire, because it's not a matter of, well, release people from these institutions and they'll have a lifespan, but after that, we're good. Lots of people have mental illness and mental health issues generation after generation, and it's part of life. We need to take care of these people the best way that we can. And even if we're, I don't know that we haven't been able to get it right clearly, but we know there are better ways than the way we used to take care of these people. I know there has to be funds somewhere. I just think that politics plays such a huge factor in this, and it's not right. And I know that probably sounds so naive of me. It's just not right, but it's not. There are people suffering, and not just those individuals with this mental health problem, but family members. And Judy, you know this, heartbreaking. It's torture, it's torment to watch a loved one go through mental health issues. So I would love to find a way to help improve the situation and make a difference, because I think it's something we can't let go.
But the money, as you said, is there somewhere. And I'll have to tell you that just a couple of weeks ago, when I was driving from California to Texas, my husband and I stopped in a restaurant, and we were the only people in the entire restaurant that were not male, Hispanic, or actually not all Hispanic, but from different countries that had come over the border. And we were the only people that paid for our meal. The other people, they all had vouchers from the government. If the government was not paying in the states and federally for all of these people flooding over our borders or that are here illegally, if we weren't incentivizing them and donating them their meals and their hotels and their transportation, that money could definitely go to taking care of people with mental health issues. And in order to get a handle on this, we need to start enforcing our laws. And that means all of our laws. We need to care for our citizens with mental illnesses and give them the help that they desperately need, which includes institutionalizing those who are gravely disabled or can't take care of themselves or are a danger to themselves. And we need to get them off the streets because, as we said, some people will never be able to live on their own. For the other segment of population that is preying on those people, the criminals, the drug addicted, we need to enforce our laws, and not the new laws and not the no bail laws, but we need to enforce the laws as they were and arrest people that are drug abusers or that are selling drugs, And at the same time, get them the help that they need to get off the drugs. I know that that's easy to say, and it's a huge task, but all we're doing is getting worse and worse at it. And one segment of that population is victimizing the other segment who are absolutely incapable of protecting themselves. So that's my first concern, is to have places that can help the mentally ill. And, you know, one of the reasons that we go way back to the beginning of our conversation, Judy and Becky, that these people don't get the help that they need is because people like the ACLU sued and said, well, you're taking their constitutional rights to lock them up and make them take drugs. We have to put our, you know, big girl panties on here and realize that some people need to be locked away for their own self-protection. And I'm not saying in a hellhole, I'm saying in a nice, safe place or community of people that need this kind of help and that will be able to get it. But right now, by doing nothing, I mean, I see it as an American shame. I'm ashamed of us for the way that we don't take care of our mentally ill in this country. And people, Judy, like your sister, I mean, they have a terrible time getting any help. So many people say, I have tried to get help from my family member for so long and I can't get it. Or I can't afford it, but more often than not, they can't even get it. And that's tragic. It's tragic for the family that is trying to care for that person. It's tragic for the person who has the issue. And I mean, nothing good comes from it, but it should be a public shame to all of us to not take care of our people in our society that so desperately need it.
Agreed. Amen. Truly.
Truly.
And you know,
go ahead.
I'm happy that we're having this conversation. It's really, really important. And I'm happy that I'm having this conversation with you all. I was remiss in not introducing who is talking here. And we have our fabulous Judy Moran, who is probably sunbathing still in Arizona because it's warm there, unlike where I am, right? Is it warm there, Judy?
It's spectacular. It was a spectacular day up in the 70s, clear sunshine.
Okay,
really
yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay, don't want to hear it. And I'm Becky Kohlmeinen, and we are living in mid-Michigan where, like I said, I woke up yesterday to -2 degrees and we just got a dumping of snow about 3 or 4 days ago. And I have been shoveling and building up lots of muscle and achy muscles, and it's not melting. And I'm still wearing 4 layers of clothing. And then we have Linda Martinelli, who is also in the warmer climate. And are you back in Texas?
I am in Texas. And
you're in
we just got through with our freeze for about 5 or 6 days. And today was warm and sunny and beautiful. So yeah, it was great. The weather is beautiful and I'm happy. I'm looking forward to spring. I'm seeing, even though it's not spring yet, I'm seeing the little buds start looking like they're thinking about it.
Okay, ladies, I'm going to be sending you photos later and show you pictures of knee deep snow.
I don't miss it, Becky. I don't miss it at all.
I know you know, but anyway, this is wonderful to be talking with each other about this really important subject. And Judy, your experience is so valuable to hear. And I think it's very easy for us to close our eyes and ears to this topic because it makes us uncomfortable. And personally, my only experience with homeless is first when I was a child, seeing my first homeless person in Atlanta, Georgia, late at night, and I was about 7 years old, and I was holding my father's hand as we were coming up of underground Atlanta, which doesn't exist anymore because it became unsafe. But there was a black man sleeping on a park bench, and he was covered in newspaper and wearing layers and layers of clothing and an old coat. And I could smell the person from where we were walking by. And I asked my dad what that man was doing. And he, and remember, this was the early, early 70s. And he said that man was a bum. So that also shows you the mentality that was prevalent in the 70s, 60s, possibly 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. We didn't have a full understanding of mental illness. Just thought anybody who was on the street was a degenerate, and it was of their own laziness or something. And thank goodness we have progressed. But it still makes people uncomfortable. We still need to figure it out. And I think conversations like this are so important.
So it is interesting, because I do think that it is a critical crisis right now. It is reaching, to me, it's reaching epic proportions in cities like San Francisco, LA, New York. And you would think that we would be so, like, as a community, as a country, that we would be so concerned, that it would be one of the most important issues really on the ballot, okay, that we would think about it. Because I, you know, you hear all of these public service announcements by celebrities talking about how mental illness should not be something that you're ashamed of, right? That mental illness touches each and every one of us in some way or another, which is very true. And to try and take that stigma away from it, right? But if you would just think about how much money is that? How much money are they spending on these commercials, okay, to try and make mental illness more mainstream, okay, and more acceptable? When I look at, it was interesting because I was trying to go back through the articles, and there was, I'm trying to see, I wish it was, I don't know, maybe you'll remember, you guys, because we all read the same article. There was a public official, I want to say a state representative, that actually said there's no correlation between the mass shootings and mental health. Okay.
Nice. I read that.
Okay, which is so, who said that? I can't remember.
No,
I thought, what are you, this is so crazy to me, because I'm like, how can that be true? That can't be true. And I found that Dr. Ira Glick from Stanford University School of Medicine conducted a huge study. And Glick's team studied 35 mass shooting cases. It occurred in the United States between 1982 and 2019 that involved shooters who survived and who were brought to trial, okay? And the analysis of various sources of medical evidence on the mass shooters showed that 28 out of 35 had mental illness diagnoses. 18 had schizophrenia. 10 had other diagnoses, including bipolar disorder, delusional disorder, personality disorders, and of course, substance-related disorders, because they were self-medicating. So, what? Hello? How could she say that? Is that just let me just speak what I want to hear? Let me just make up my own facts? I don't understand. When you have the, you know, and they're all up, I mean, I am horrified. We just had, right? You just had in Oxford, Michigan, mass shooter, and we lost so many children. And it was so, so sad.
Hear, Judy, that he's claiming insanity?
Of course he is, right. And you know what? He probably does have some sort of a mental illness. Okay. I'm sure of it. I mean, I'm not sure of it. I don't know the guy, but I can imagine that he probably does. And we're not caring for this population. We are not taking care of this population. We would rather spend money, like you said, Linda, letting a whole, you know, just open our borders, pay for non-citizens, right? But we will not take care of our own citizens. I just think our priorities are all messed up.
Well, they're totally messed up. We, you know, I keep going back to the homeless situation because so many of these people that do have mental health issues end up in that homeless population. And I mean, for two reasons, we need to start forcing these homeless encampments to be gone. We need to be shutting them down. And the three segments of the population that are in those encampments, the mentally ill, we need to get them help. The people that are drug addicted, we need to get them help for several reasons. One, because they support their lifestyle with crime, which affects all of us. And the other is for themselves. And some people have drug addictions and mental health problems. And like you said, they self-medicate because they already have mental health problems. So it's a big spider web of a mess. And then you have the people that are just there hanging out and, you know, having a free lifestyle. And those people need to be forced to just move out, move on, because it's not fair to the people in the encampments. And it's not fair to the people who live nearby, the people that have to work nearby, the people whose businesses and homes become victims of criminal acts, the people that have to walk down the streets in San Francisco and be have to sidestep needles and feces and urine. And I have been there and done it myself, and I won't go back there. I will not go back there. So it's not fair to all of us. In a city like San Diego, which is a beautiful, beautiful city, you pay $1 million, more than $1 million, for a beautiful condo where you can see the ocean and these high rises. And when you walk out your door onto the street, there's hundreds of homeless people right in front of your property. What does that do to your property value? This whole situation is untenable. It's not fair to any of us. And I go back again to those people with mental health issues that are not getting the help we need. And we need, as a society, to find a way. It used to be that, you know, the churches helped a lot with some of these situations, and it doesn't seem like that's happening so much. But there is one little bit of good news, and I stress that it's a little bit of good news, that in July of 2022, there's the new 988 crisis hotline is supposed to be instituted, and a number of states have signed on to do that. So instead of calling 911, if there's somebody that's in a mental health crisis, they can call 988 and hopefully have people that can handle mental health calls rather than the traditional police, fire, medical emergency line, you know, to 911. People that have more training in helping with mental health issues. So I think that is one small step, but that small step is not going to get people off the streets and stop them from being victimized and from victimizing other people. This is some small step, and I'm glad that we're taking it. I think we need to do much, much more, though. And we can't sit back and just allow these communities to flourish because there's nothing good happening there. There's no help for them. Think of the children that have to be living in those kinds of tent cities and in boxes. And it's just heartbreaking. There's nobody that should be living like that. And we can do better, and we have to do better by these people. We just have to.
it's going to have to be handled so differently than it was. And I'm not sure how that's going to start, except the government needs to handle things differently than they have. I would think that perhaps it's going to take the influence from outside of the government in order to get the government on board, if that makes any sense. Does that make sense? I don't see the government initiating the changes that need to take place and funneling or channeling rather the funds that need to be put in place for changes to happen. Instead of using our hospitals and jails as a temporary or permanent place to hold people with mental illness, or these encampments. I don't know. That's just my thought, is that it's going to have to be innovative and something different than what we've done before.
Well, I'll tell you this. The people of California, it is in their hands, okay? Because Linda, you were saying, so you have someone who owns a beautiful condominium, pays millions of dollars for it, right? Steps out their front door and they're stepping on needles and feces and over people, and they're afraid because they're approached all the time, right? I saw people literally having big, huge boulders put on their land in front of their house to try and prevent the homeless from putting their tents on the curb right in front of their house. And yet, these same people are paying the highest taxes. Okay. California has a 13% income tax rate. Okay. And I know that the property taxes are astronomical. So the amount of money that they are paying and is going straight to what? The $61 million for these encampment cities. Right? Somebody has to stand up and say, excuse me, I want to vote with my money. Okay. I want my politicians to understand. So these same people who are paying these astronomical taxes need to vote with their money. They need to speak up. They need to talk to their politicians and say, something has to change.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.